Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Robots Radio presents...
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Sergio.
Crit.
I found a tome of ancient secrets. It was in the cupboard next to the broom.
Yeah, I put that there.
Oh. Well, damn me for being excited.
Well, I didn't look. The stuff in that book is can be dangerous, and I didn't, let's put it out there, I didn't trust you. I didn't trust that you would start flipping through it.
Moi?
Fucking stuff up.
Me?
Like, it has to do with all sorts of crazy supernatural undead things.
Read me a story, Sergio. Read me a story.
Well, it's spooky season out there.
It is.
Everything. Did you know that when I was a kid, I didn't know how daylight savings time worked, and I just assumed that it got darker because Halloween was coming.
I never want you to lose that childhood dream.
I mean, I still kind of believe it. I mean, it just gets darker so much quicker now. But yeah, it's Halloween coming up here at the end of this month. Mm. And so we're going to spend the month talking about all manner of spooky things. We're going to start off this episode with some of your favorite undead creatures, your ghosts, your banshees, your will-o'-the-wisps, your will-o'-wisps, and your wraiths.
I just want to say, did you know banshees are a whale of a time? I know it was terrible. But anyway.
I did know that. That makes sense, though. That makes sense.
All right. So what's our first ghost to jump into?
Well, we're just going to go into the ghost.
The ghost.
The ghost. Not the Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, Whoopi Goldberg, you know, amazing film that has transformed so many people's lives, but the undead creature that is essentially, like, in D&D lore, it's not unlike, you know, what we know as a ghost in real life. Or I guess if you believe in ghosts or don't believe in ghosts, the way we talk about ghosts is the way they talk about ghosts in the D&D worlds. You know, it's a ghost is the soul of a once living being that is chained to a location or a creature or an object. Like, it's doomed to haunt. It's fated to haunt that location or that person or that object. I guess until it's free. You know, like it has unfinished business, so to speak. Perhaps it was someone who was murdered. And once their murder avenged before their soul can rest, perhaps it was someone who can't enter into the afterlife as a result of the terrible, awful things they did in their living life. You know, perhaps it's just someone like Slimer who just likes to eat. He just likes to eat. But ghosts are cool. Ghosts are definitely something that can add to the eeriness, to the spookiness of your campaign. One thing is that, you know, that being undead, they don't require air or food or drink or they don't need sleep. They don't need any of that stuff that living creatures need. So you don't have to worry about you know, making sure it makes sense, like in context, like, well, this ghost has been here for 1,000 years. You know, there's no 7-Eleven nearby. but according to D&D Beyond, sensations of profound sadness, loneliness, and unfulfilled yearning emanate from places where ghostly hauntings occur. Strange sounds, or even unnatural silences, cold spots, you know, smells like odors, like noxious smells, inanimate objects being moved, like being thrown around. Think like poltergeist type situation. You know, these can be indicators that something is afoot, that there might be a ghost nearby. Speaking from a combat perspective, you know, ghosts aren't too high up. So it's something, if you're starting off a new campaign, that's a ghost is something that you can throw in relatively early into it. I think their challenge rating's 4, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their armor class is only 11. So they're relatively easy to hit if you can get to them, because like most really cool player characters, the player character races, they can fly. So it's a really cool, if you're a DM, it might be a way to get used to handling the mechanics of flight in combat, you know, throw a ghost in there. And then at that point, you're able to, you know, start letting players have characters who can fly, like the Aarakocras who we spoke of earlier a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, like, it's really cool. They have obviously being like sort of like non-temporal, they have, you know, damage resistance to acid, fire, lightning, thunder, so like the elements, as well as you know, your basic damage from weapons, which would be bludgeoning, piercing, slashing. You need something magical to take on a ghost. If you're running around with your, you know, level 1 greatsword, you're not going to do much to old ghosty.
Mm-hmm.
It's got dark vision. The only language is there's no like ghost language. It just knows, it just remembers whatever languages it knew while it was alive, right? Some cool attacks that it has is it has the horrifying visage. So each non-undead creature within 60 feet of the ghost, so more likely like 9 times out of 10, your basic player character, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to be playing a non-undead or a living creature.
Yeah.
Must succeed on a DC 13 wisdom saving throw or be frightened for 1 minute.
Oh, yes. And I forgot minute, about that one. Yeah.
1 minute is 10 rounds. In game, that's a lot of rounds. It's a lot of rounds. I was explaining to my wife the other day how a 2-hour long combat, it could really only be like 3 minutes in real life.
Oh, yeah,
3 minutes in the game.
Oh, yeah,
so that's fun. but yeah, so if they fail the saving throw, they are frightened for a minute. Saving throw fails by 5 or more, so if they roll an 8 or under,
mm-hmm.
the target also ages 1d4 times 10 years, which is anywhere from 10 to 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is pretty freaking cool. A frightened target can repeat the saving throw at each of its turns, at the end of each of its turns.
Yep.
Ending the frightened condition on itself as a success. So that's, you know, so you start off every turn frightened until you're able to meet that saving throw. So you're not able to like go get that saving throw and then hopefully do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because being frightened in D&D, you have disadvantage on pretty much everything, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
On ability checks, on attack rolls, and then you can't willingly move closer to the source of your fear. So
yeah,
if you, I mean, even if you have that magical greatsword, if you're afraid of this ghost, if this ghost has hit you with its horrifying visage and you find yourself frightened by it, like you cannot attack it because you can't get any closer to it unless it comes closer to you.
Yeah.
But if it stays floating above, you know, 20 feet, 40 feet, it can fly up to 40 feet, again, hover 40 feet over your head. If it's doing that, there's no way you can attack it until you beat that saving throw, that wisdom saving throw.
Yeah, that's the part that sucks.
Very cool, yeah. If a target saving throw is successful or the effect for it ends, so after 10 rounds, the target is immune to this ghost's horrifying visage for the next 24 hours.
So just an FYI to all those DMs out there, throw four ghosts in the room.
Exactly. And then that's the other thing too is I don't know, ghosts are essentially like, you know, people. So it's not like they have lost any of their intelligence. So yeah. Depending on like how much of a stinky rat you want to be DM wise, you could have like four ghosts just like keep trying to hit each person with a horrifying visage,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, and just keep them scared, which is a pretty good strategy.
Oh yeah.
They've also got possession, which that one humanoid that the ghost can see within 5 feet of it must succeed on a DC 13 charisma saving throw or be possessed by the ghost. So the previous one was a wisdom saving throw. You get scared. This one is a charisma saving throw. You get possessed. The ghost then disappears and the target is incapacitated and loses control of its body. The ghost now controls the body but doesn't deprive the target of awareness. The ghost can't be targeted by any spell, attack, or any effect except the ones that turn undead, and it retains its alignment, intelligence, all that. It's immune to being charmed or frightened. It can otherwise use the possessed target's statistics, but doesn't gain access to the target's knowledge or class features or proficiencies. So the ghost can't possess your character and find out the secret information that the character knows or that the party knows. That's going to take down the big bad at the end, right? Or any class features I was going to say dark vision, but ghosts already have dark vision.
Mm-hmm.
But any sort of class features that come with being a barbarian, like rage, for example.
Oh yeah.
There you go. There's one.
Figured it out. See, back in 3.5 days when barbarians could use cleave, greater cleave, and like so on and so forth, a barbarian ghost was quite a challenge to deal with.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
Things.
I mean, yeah. As big and it's hard. You don't want to... I mean, especially if it's your party member, you don't really want to hurt them. Although the possession... lasts until the body until that person hits zero hit points.
Oh yeah.
It's a zero hit point. So the ghost ends it as a bonus action, or the ghost is turned or forced out by an effect like dispel evil and good. When the possession ends, the ghost reappears in a non-occupied space within 5 feet of the body. And again, that target is immune to possession, to that ghost's possession,
mm-hmm.
24 hours. Either after the saving throw, a successful saving throw, or the possession ends. So, I mean, that's one way to definitely do it. Just like beat up your buddy with non-lethal damage.
Monk, where are you?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mean, like, I guess in fifth edition, non-lethal isn't really a thing like it was in 3.5.
Yeah, it's not as, I mean, it's always going to be a thing, but yeah. It's not as different as 3.5 was. With 3.5, yeah, they would make you deal non-lethal, and then you sometimes would have to do half, and it was a huge mathematical equation to figure out how much damage you did.
Yeah, now it's just like, hey, I don't want to kill this guy because I want to ask him some stuff. I just kind of want to knock him out. Like, all right, cool.
Yeah, they made it easy. Like, straight,
you swing at him with your sword, and at the last second, you turn the hilt, and instead of slashing through him, you just knock him on the head with the flat side of it.
Exactly.
But like I said, ghosts are, they're tricky. I mean, they're not strong. In fact, they have a strength of 7.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know, they're dexterous only because of their flight, and they've got charisma. But beyond that, you know, their constitution, their intelligence, their wisdom is a baseline 10. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's just something that you can throw in relatively early to sort of like spook up your campaign or get used to the mechanics of flight. Not terribly early, because like I said, like, you know, I say like they got a CR of 4. I was correct on that. And so you don't want to get a TPK on nearly headless Nick on your new party.
TPK nearly headless Nick. Oh goodness. Yeah, ghosts are one of those creatures that we typically overlook as DMs, especially veteran DMs. You'll overlook those almost every time in favor of the cooler, so to speak, apparitions. And ghosts definitely have their place on the battlefield, because not only can they be used in combat decently effective, but they're really great when you use them as poltergeists.
No, yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, like, and this isn't, you know, as a DM, well, as a player, you know, like there's always the chance of possibly, you know, because these aren't like mindless. These aren't like, you know, mm-hmm. zombies or kind of like, we'll talk about them later, like banshees, where they are like driven to kill.
Yeah.
Or to hurt. Like they're not driven by anger for the most part. You know, they can be, but you know, if you're exploring a cave or a long forgotten mansion and you see a ghost there, and you know, they're aggressive, there is a chance to possibly, you know, turn them to your side.
Oh, yeah.
And get them to help.
Oh, yeah. They can, and they can always be used as great NPCs too. I mean, mission givers, quest givers.
No, yeah, absolutely. Like the tried and true hook of avenge my death, you know, find out who killed me.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a humdinger of a mystery adventure right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would love to play one of those.
What, a murder mystery?
Yeah. I mean, they're out there. They do exist. It's not like I came up with some novel idea, but I just like saying it out loud made me think like, yeah, that'd be fun. I want to do one right now.
So we've talked a lot about ghosts. What's our next apparition on the table?
Well, I brought them up earlier, the Banshee.
Ooh.
You seemed pretty... like pretty dead set on talking about banshees. Like unlike ghosts, which, you know, can be, not only, like good, but even like beneficial to your party. Like they could actually be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
A banshee is like just full on, like, I'm trying to kill you. They are. And I know that D&D is starting to shy away from the very static alignments. But for right now, Banshee is considered a chaotic, an undead, chaotic, evil character. And mm-hmm. I'm sure like that might be something that isn't necessarily changed. But for the most part, throughout, you know, the history of their history in this game, they've been evil.
Oh, yeah.
Banshees actually have their, like, in our world, it's like Irish folklore. The Banshee is like let me see here. It's a legend. It's an Irish legend. It heralds the death of a family member by wailing, shrieking. It says, or keening. I don't know what keening is. I assume it's something like wailing or shrieking.
It's kind of on the same. It's almost like a lower tone of it, I believe. It's either lower or higher pitched.
It says, here it goes. It says, prolonged and high pitched.
Yeah, yeah. I know it's like a ridiculously annoying.
So that's, I love when they take, like folklore and legends that are from like real life.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, as opposed to creating their own, but like taking stuff like a banshee, and you know, adding a D&D twist to it. But the banshees are cool. They embody the essence of hideousness. And oftentimes they are the spirits of elven women whom in life had an evil alignment.
Yes. I think that's the coolest part of the banshee, is that I believe there's an old legend about banshees as well, that they come from scorned women. They're scorned women's souls in our world. That's some of the origin myths behind them, of the real banshee. I love the fact that they made this elven women, because of the fact of magical, I mean, we've talked about it several times already. Elves are more attuned to magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I love that they kept that kind of going.
Yeah, I mean, they in life, like you said, they're more attuned to magic. So if their spirit doesn't move on to the afterlife, their spirit continues to dwell on the material plane.
Yep.
There's still some sort of connection to magic there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got corrupting touch, which, oh, and by the way, so again, they can also hover. They can also fly. They are very similar in terms of challenge rating. So, so if you've got a party of like third to fifth level, like, you know, using ghosts and banshees would be like, you know, setting that that part of the campaign, or just setting up a solo one shot adventure. You can definitely use these two creatures.
Yeah.
So they've got Corrupting Touch. It's a melee spell attack. It has a +4 to hit, which, I mean, if you're rolling a D20, a +4 would help any time. And if it does hit, it is 3d6 +2 of necrotic damage. So anywhere from 8 to 20 points of necrotic damage is available from Corrupting Touch. They also have Horrifying Visage, much like the ghost. And they're really cool. Their best attack is their wail, which they can do once a day. The banshee releases a mournful wail, provided that she isn't in sunlight. This wail has no effect on constructs and undead.
Yep.
All other creatures, again, I mean, like you could, I mean, more often than not, your player character is going to be a living humanoid, so a non-construct, non-undead creature. All other creatures within 30 feet of her that can hear her must make a DC 13 Constitution saving throw. Now, this one, it being con, you know, most characters tend to try to keep that above 10, you know, just to just for the hit points.
Yeah.
And so the 13 isn't too bad, because if you have a modifier, if you have a +1 or +2 modifier.
Yeah.
But still, on a failure, the creature drops to 0 hit points.
That's it.
So yeah. So you're immediately at death saving throw, the process of trying not to die.
Well,
but then even on a success, you take 3d6 psychic damage.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, even if you succeed, you're still hitting it really hard.
I mean, like, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's such a dangerous attack.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a party of five,
party of five,
and they're walking into this old, you know, abandoned tomb that is rumored to be haunted. But come on, no one believes in that sort of stuff. I hear there's some gold in here, and then you just hear this loud wail, this mournful wail, and two of you immediately drop to the floor, and the other three of you, you know, are like, you know, have this sort of like existential pain inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is terrifying. I mean, that's a hell of a way to start a combat.
I laugh because this has happened to my party.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Now,
were you the DM or were you part of the party?
I was the DM. I was like, everybody's got decent. Yeah, of course. I was like, everybody's got a decent con. We're going to be all right. No, two immediately dropped to the floor and it's these two left to fight it. And I'm like, oh no. This is the thing though I want to bring up. This is vastly different from the 3.5 days. It used to be you hear the whale and you don't make the save, you're just dead. There's no zero. You're just dead. Kills you on the spot.
Yeah.
And if you manage to pass, you're still taking a ridiculous amount of dice to your face. There was no exceptions to this. I do like the fact that they have changed this for 5.0 because now it gives you a little bit more of a oomph. You know, it gives them a chance.
I would hate to think that one bad roll means the death of your character.
Exactly.
I mean, when you're at a complete, hit points at complete health, you know, I can understand, like, you know, being in the middle of combat and, you know, someone swings at you and their great roll ends up, you know, hitting and the damage roll ends up taking you out. Like, okay, like that happens in the game. But, you know, hearing this mournful wail and then, you know, rolling a 10 and then you're dead. Like, I mean, I could see like many a player being pretty upset about that.
This is why I rarely use Banshees in 3.5.
No, yeah, for sure. But because of that little tweak on the rules, on the rules for damage and failing on the saving throw, you know, a Banshee could be a very, very tough, but very fun sort of like mid boss.
Oh, definitely.
If you've got this sort of like spooky dungeon crawl sort of thing, you know, you hit them with some ghosts and then also like some will-o-wisp that, you know, we'll talk about after the break, just to get them started. And then you hit them with a Banshee where they've got to try to not die upon hearing it. Although I would think maybe dropping hints about having the players like cover their ears.
Oh yeah. Here's what I did when the 3.5 back in the 3.5 days, I would leave subtle hints either. Well, the one that comes to mind was the village. They were in a village and there was a mansion that was haunted by a Banshee. And they're subtle. If they talked to the villagers, the NPCs, they would get subtle hints of there's a wailing of a woman in the middle of the night. The men go in and screams are heard, but no one comes out. You know, I would leave these subtle hints as to, hey, you need to take earplugs.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the danger of like metagaming, is if you're too like forward with it, if you're not subtle enough, then, you know, a player like me would be like, oh, that's, you know, it's probably a Banshee. Like,
yeah.
I know, but, you know, my character might not know that, but just being able to drop subtle enough hints that, you know, the players believe, like in character, they believe it's a good idea to possibly cover up their ears at a certain point.
Now, I have had a very creative death with Banshees. I want to say this before we continue. used a megaphone against a Banshee.
Oh, okay.
Now, it was a very odd and peculiar. They basically had a magical item that could create a 60-foot sphere of metal around an object they choose. They chose to use this. It was called the shield. Which is called the shield. Okay. They chose to use this on the Banshee right as she wailed, trapping the Banshee in a sphere with her own wails.
Oh.
Now, typically, the Banshee's immune to this, but because I loved this and I didn't want them to fail, I went ahead and rolled it. The creativity was enough for me. I was like, you know what? This one's special. And it died.
And before we get to the break, we'll link to this in the show notes. But I'm a big fan of DM Dave and the content that he produces. Mm-hmm. And he's got variants on the Banshee that Ooh. Are very cool. Like it's and there's a lot of different five different variants that he talks about that he's built up, and I haven't used them. Obviously, like I was in the research for this episode is when I discovered it, so I haven't used them in game, but based on other stuff of his, yeah, you could safely say like you can go ahead and incorporate them without much tweaking at all.
Oh yeah, I mean usually with his stuff you usually can.
But yeah, so like I said, we'll link to that in the notes. But yeah, Banshee's like a really fun potential mid boss for your spooky adventure.
Oh yeah.
It's that time.
It's that time. Should we go to a mid break?
Let's do it.
Woo! All right, Sergio, here we are in the middle of the show. And you know the first thing we should do?
Thank our patrons.
Thank our patrons. I got it from here. I got it right. To work this time.
Got that one right.
All right. So first I want to thank our scholar patrons, Wolf the Sheepdog and Remington Cloutier. Next is our wizard patrons, Stagger and Stumble, Jonathan Sutter, and Chris Mitchell. And
those guys can join us on the patron chat next week.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. they can join us along with our two deity patrons who also get to join in a monthly game ran by Mawa. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a chance to play our first one, but I'm looking forward to the first one.
Yeah, I've got my character figured out. Like I'm excited about it.
Yes. And our two patrons are Jared Bush and Lupus Malum. They are
Maverick and Lupus.
Yep. And they are at our deity level. So thank you, patrons.
Thank you so much for supporting us, for allowing us to do a lot of cool things with the show, create merchandise, mm-hmm. Buy the latest, the latest Wizards of the Coast books, like official books, so that we can review them on the show.
Yep.
And like we've got a lot of cool stuff planned for the show. So
yep.
If you're listening and you can throw a few dollars our way, please do so. As low as $5 gets you early episodes and ad free as well. $10 gets you bonus episodes. Anywhere, like they could be like full on, like hour long episodes, or they can be like little short, like 15 to 20 minute, just like quick info dumps. Also, you'll get access to listening to the patron D&D campaign. So like I said, like for $5 to $10, you can get a lot of content.
A lot. Yep. So once again, thank you to our patrons. And I do want to say a very special thank you to everyone who listens too. You guys are also awesome and important and incredible. And we love you guys. Without all of you, patrons and listeners, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, if you're a fan of ours, but can't financially support, like that's by like we're not upset at it. You know, the fact that you're listening means so much to us. And if you could like tell a friend, that guy that works across the office who you've seen wear Flash t-shirt or a Batman, like hey, he's probably a nerd, probably likes nerdy things like D&D.
He likes tell nerdy him, things.
Tell him about your favorite D&D lore cast with Almighty Crit and Sergio.
I say, don't leave yourself out there. You're just as important, Sergio.
I'm here.
But that's on our patrons. Next, I want to steal the spotlight for a moment and talk about a mini that Lupus brought up in our Discord.
It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, so there's
if
two.
If you thought a $400 Terrisk, which I've discovered it is pronounced Terrisk.
It is pronounced Terrisk. Okay.
It's based in French folklore, much like the Banshee is Irish folklore.
Oh.
The Terrisk has its origins in French folklore. And a professor of mine, messaged me to tell me that he runs like one of the campaigns that I'm in, and I could feel his like very disappointed glare at me. Like, I can't believe you're one of my students. What? How dare you?
What is wrong with you?
Exactly.
Yes, so this mini, the first one I want to bring up is ridiculous. It is by Iron Studios. It is available for pre-order right now. And it is estimated arrival in the second quarter of 2022. It is a Tiamat battle. Okay, this is Tiamat actually battling and using breath weapons. 1x20 demi art scale limited edition statue. And it's only a measly $1,500.
Just $1,500.
Holy cow! I mean, it does look sick, and we do have to say it's probably very meticulously handcrafted. I mean, the design looks very meticulously handcrafted alone. So, I mean, I get it. I can see why. But still, $1,500. And it's very reminiscent of the cartoon version.
Yeah, absolutely. From the D&D cartoon.
Yeah.
From the 80s. And we'll link to that. I put a link here in the Twitch chat, but we'll also link to that in the show notes. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, you can check it out. It's $1,500.
Yeah,
it's bananas.
And it is sick looking, but again, it's $1,500.
I mean, for $1,500, I better be able to climb on it and go to the store or something.
It better be my new mode of transportation every day. So
it is super dope, though.
It is. The next one I want to bring up, and the final mini I want to bring up this time, is the Asian-style red dragon.
This one's more financially feasible.
Yeah. It's $89.95, and you can get it at, let me pull up the website here.
TheThrillStudio.com.
Yep. And it is really cool looking, honestly. It is a red dragon with it's Asian styling. So, you know, your typical Chinese dragons from, you know, artwork and things. It's more based that way. It's only, you know, $89.95. It's only $90. So that's typically what we're used to paying right around for our very large minis.
Like a fully painted mini. Like, that's, like I said, that's more financially feasible. If you're in the mini game, I don't see how this one is like that egregious.
Yeah, it's not terrible, and it really is pretty to look at. It's very pretty to look at. But yeah, those are my minis for the mini corner today.
It's very cool. Well, because we're speaking of all things, not all things, but many things undead, we'll try to get to all of them throughout the month. My DM's Guild corner is going to be the Gift of Unlife.
Ooh.
This is a PDF brought to you by a gentleman known as Claudio Castelnteto. And the Gift of Unlife contains the rules and references you need to fully handle and manage undead PCs or NPCs in your campaign. In this volume, you can find specific rules to control entire undead armies.
Yeah.
Which is something I've always been interested in D&D, is incorporating those war game like rule sets that Arneson and Gygax were originally playing. You know, but then they sort of like streamlined it into like a smaller party, right?
Yep.
Like taking that broader scope. Many cues and ideas to role play in undead, which is right up our wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Three new playable undead races.
Ooh.
A new playable class. 18 new feats, 8 mutations, 33 new spells, and 21 new magic items.
I like this.
It's very cool.
I'm going to have to go grab this one.
It's called the Gift of Unlife, and it's only $11.56 off the Dungeon Masters Guild.
That's not bad for as much as you get.
Again, I'm linking to that in the Twitch chat right now, and we'll have the link in the show notes. Hey, Blorgar, how's it going? I'm playing with Blorgar in a. it sounds like I have a bunch of peanut butter in my mouth.
Peanut butter, yeah. I was like, you got something in your mouth.
I'm playing with Blorgar at a charity Dead by Daylight tournament this weekend.
Ooh.
So if you want to check that out, you can visit Lydia or not. You can find her on Twitch. You can find her on Twitter under that handle. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Ooh. We're raising money for Make-A-Wish.
So, yes. I'm going to have to tune in.
Yeah, it's a great cause, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully we don't lose in the first round. We've been practicing all week, so fingers crossed.
I'd say I've been watching you guys practice, so.
It's frightening. Any tips for us?
Don't die.
Yeah. We had someone sort of like kind of like spectating and coaching us, giving us some tips afterwards. I'm like, your tip for me is going to be better. Just be better at the game.
Just be better. Get good.
Yeah, get good. Let's go ahead and jump to the back half of the show.
Well, first.
Oh, no.
Sergio. What is this?
Oh, of course.
What is this?
The giveaway.
What is this?
We're giving away a special edition hardcover copy of the Haunt Trilogy. It's what, like $60? $50?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like $60. Yeah.
It the printing looks amazing. It will look completely incredible next to your official D&D books.
Look at that.
Almost 200 pages.
We got a
fully printed, full color.
Custom character sheets in the back.
The games themselves, the adventures themselves are a lot of fun. I've actually just started running the first Haunt. It's three. It's the Haunt 2, the Haunt 3. I started running the first Haunt for my friend's D&D group, and they're loving it. They think everything is trying to kill them. They're so on edge. but yeah, if you want to enter to win that game, all you have to do is either follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/AlmightyCrit, or go to our Twitter and follow us there, which is twitter.com/D&D Lorecast. That's the letter D, the letter N, the letter D, Lorecast. And our pinned tweet on our profile is the official giveaway tweet. All you have to do is like or retweet that tweet. That's the second entry that you can earn. A third entry that you could earn is by going to the Robots Radio Discord, of which we are a member of. Go to the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast channel. And we have a pinned post on that. All you have to do is react to that. Post a little emoji. And that is a third entry you can get. So you can have three ways to win. And we will draw a winner live on air right after Halloween on the November 4th episode.
Yep. Great. Now I think we're ready to transition to the end.
Let's go.
There's never been a better time to have the William scream than right now during this episode.
Well, let's talk about the Wraith real quick.
Oh, yes.
So the Wraith is, I would say like a ghost plus, like a
that's a good way to put it, I guess.
Like a ghost on steroids.
Oh yeah, they're pretty vicious and gnarly. I would say ghost plus.
They can also hover, but as opposed to the 40 feet that ghosts or banshees are stuck at, they can actually go up to 60 feet. They, like most undead creatures, they have all sorts of damage resistances. Your elementals, your acids, and then in addition to the non-magical items that, you know, the bludgeoning, the piercing, the slashing that ghosts are immune from, they are also immune to non-magical attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But also the weapon has to be silver.
Yes, that is huge difference.
So if you've got an iron magic greatsword, that might do something to that ghost you met at the beginning of the dungeon crawl, but ain't doing nothing to this Wraith.
Mm-hmm.
So a Wraith is, according to D&D, is malice incarnate, concentrated into an incorporeal form that seeks to quench all life. So while a ghost can, you know, you can play them either way on any way on the alignment, the Wraith, much like the Banshee, is just evil, just bad.
Yep.
You know, there ain't gonna be no talking to a Wraith. The creature is suffused with negative energy and its mere passage to the world leaves nearby plants blackened and withered.
That is my favorite part of that.
Animals flee from its presence. So that would be a very subtle clue, very cool clue for your party to, if they're like sort of walking through a forest.
Yes.
And like for like before, like you tell them like, oh, you see a deer off in the distance. You see like, you know, all sorts of like varmints running around. And then as they go further into the forest, like you tell them like, you know, the flora seems dead and withered as if it's been sucked out of all life. And in fact, you realize you haven't seen an animal for about 3 minutes, you know, for about 100 yards or so, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that could be a really cool way to like kind of hip them to something is wrong.
So, I have actually, in the homebrew world we have of Altaris for the Fumbling Four, in one of the forests, there is a circle, a giant circle in the forest that is plagued by wraiths.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, they're bound there by an ancient spell, but the entire circumference of this area is nothing but withered and dead plants.
Yeah,
and it stretches for miles.
Yeah, I wonder if what would be cool is like make it sort of like a like, you know, there's like that scary house that the kids will be like, I dare you to go knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then like that'll be like, I dare you like put a foot inside the circle.
Yep. Yep.
The circle of death.
Yep.
So it's got incorporeal movement, which it can move through creatures and objects as if it was difficult terrain. It takes force damage if it ends its turn inside of an object. But so it can actually, like, you know, fly through walls, people, horses, all manner of things, all the things. Walls, people,
I just
and
love
horses.
How horses was on that list.
Oh, so it's got, I mean, its attacks are gnarly. It's got life drain. It's a plus six to attack, which is gnarly, and does 4d8 plus 3 of necrotic damage. The target must succeed on a DC 14 constitution saving throw, or its hit point maximum is reduced by an amount equal to the damage taken. So your entire like hit point stash, like your goes down.
Oh yeah.
You can't, even if you heal after this, until you take a long rest, you can't get above that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So you start off with 48 hit points, you get hit with this for 24 damage, you automatically only have 24 hit points, and you can't get over that until you take a long rest.
Yeah.
You are stuck at 24 hit points.
Yeah.
The target dies if this effect reduces its hit point maximum to zero. So it says the target dies. It doesn't say the target falls unconscious or the target must succeed on death saving throws. It says the target dies.
Yes.
So that might be something you want to stick with to make it that much more dangerous, or you might want to tweak just so, like we were talking about earlier, one bad roll doesn't mean the death of a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They also have create specter. The wraith targets a humanoid within 10 feet of it that has been dead for no longer than 1 minute and died violently. So one of its victims, presumably.
Yes.
The target spirit rises as a specter in the space of its corpse or in the nearest unoccupied space. The specter is under the wraith's control. The wraith can have no more than 7 specters under its control at a time. So how gnarly would it be to, you know, if it hits your party member with life drain, it reduces, because of that, it reduces its hit points to zero. Your party member dies and then immediately comes back as a specter.
Yes.
Who you then have to fight.
This has happened. I've seen it happen.
Oh, no, absolutely. Of course it's happened. Yeah, it sounds great. Its one weakness is sunlight. It has sensitivity to sunlight. While in sunlight, the wraith has disadvantage on attack rolls as well as wisdom checks that rely on sight. So if you can figure out a way to get the Wraith into sunlight, that would be one of your best bets. Because at that point, all of its attacks have disadvantage.
I mean, you could always use a spell.
Exactly.
This is where your magic casters come in. When fighting ethereal beings, your magic casters are your heavy hitters.
So what are some spells that they could use?
Oh, you threw me in it. There's so many spells.
There's daylight.
Daylight. Yeah, I was going to say, I believe there's daylight. You could use... now, this is a creative one. You could use fairy fire. Okay. Now, that doesn't do anything light-wise, but it does give you a better chance at accurately hitting the thing to take it down quicker. Because when you use fairy fire, you get pluses. Your allies get pluses. And you give negative effects to the enemy. So that'll also help you guys to avoid the attacks.
True.
And fireball. Sunbeam. Yeah, and then there's Sunbeam. Sunbeam is another one. Fireball. I've seen this one. This was very creative. Fireball, not to do damage to the enemy, but fireball to blow the wall up.
Yeah.
Allowing natural light to bleed in.
Yeah.
Because the party argued, and this I let it go, because the party argued that moonlight is just the sun behind the moon. So ergo, it is technically sunlight.
I don't know how I feel about that. I think they got down on you there.
They did. They did a little bit. But I let it go because I liked where it was going.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, in some ways you want your if you're a DM and you want your players to sort of think outside the box and come up with unique and fun mm-hmm. ways to, instead of just, you know, being murder hobos. But that's the Wraith. Before we run out of time, let's talk about Will-O-Wisp really quick.
Ooh, yes.
These little guys could definitely be the beginning of your spooky adventure or your spooky campaign. You know, I think they're a challenge rating of 1 or 2.
Yeah, they're not very high.
But they're little lights. They're little wispy balls of light that haunt lonely places and battlefields. Bound by dark fate or dark magic to feed on fear and despair. So they look like lanterns off in the distance, but then once you get close to them, you start to hear like faint whispers. Like, I like to think of them as like spirits of people that for some reason, like, you know, like a ghost is a more fully formed spirit, but a Will-O-Wisp is something that for whatever reason couldn't exactly, like, you know, form itself, like keep its form after mm-hmm. it died, and so it's stuck as like this little ball of light, and perhaps that's where the malevolence comes from, the anger that they're known for, is because it's doomed to live out its existence as this little ball of light. But yeah, it's got a shock attack +4. But the damage is a 2d8. So unless it's got a great roll, you're looking at probably any like low single or high single digits, low double digit damage.
Mm-hmm.
It has invisibility. The Will-O-Wisp and its light magically become invisible until it attacks or uses its consume life, or until its concentration ends. The consume life is as a bonus action. The Will-O-Wisp can target one creature it can see within 5 feet of it that has 0 hit points and is still alive. The target must succeed on a DC 10 constitution saving throw against this magic, or it dies.
Yep.
So that would be... maybe at the beginning of an adventure, a spooky adventure, but then also throughout, like these Will-O-Wisps like continue to follow the party throughout the um, throughout their camp, throughout the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be careful in case one of your party members, falls down in battle, that it doesn't come in and do the consume life spell on it. On
yes.
him or her.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, like little balls of light that actually will kill you. So, I mean, that's kind of creepy. That's very, very, especially in a dark, dangerous forest.
Mm-hmm.
Forest, you would think like light is a good thing, but not necessarily.
Yeah, they're typically like almost like pranksters. They typically almost play out like pranksters. They're trying to draw players or living creatures into a trap, essentially. And that's the way I've always played them, as you might see this bouncing light in the woods and you may be prone to fall it. And when you do, you are surrounded by other wisps.
Yeah, like you follow one and then you turn around, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden there's 10 around you.
Exactly. So they themselves can be, even though they're challenge rating, one, they're not very high. Putting a lot of them together, this is something that DMs need to keep in mind, putting a lot of them together can make for a recipe for disaster.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like one thing that I read on Twitter one time was, if your party, if your players aren't afraid of goblins, then you're not using goblins right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'll always remember that, there shouldn't be you might even lure them into this false sense of security. Just some, will-o-wisp, whatever. And they take down a couple. And then when they take down a couple, three more appear.
Yep.
And they take down two more and then four more appear. And then all of a sudden, where the hell are these coming from? Like, oh, we got to get out of here.
Yeah. We got to bounce, guys. We out. Yeah. Right. So lots of spoopies, lots of ghosties.
All the spoopies.
So before we bid everyone adieu, still owe a magical item.
Of course you do.
But again, because I love this month so much, I'm going to give you two magical items. I know. I've been cooking up. The gears are rolling. So both of these items are used, part of an item that I'm currently homebrewing called the Ghost Chapter Capture Kit.
Okay.
Okay. This is for Halloween thing I'm doing for the podcast. It is a group of ghost catchers. Yep. They call themselves the Ghost Captors. But anyway, it's a kit that they've created. Now, two of these items, one of them is an ethereal chain, okay? This ethereal chain can be wrapped around any ethereal being, and the being must succeed a DC 16 wisdom saving throw.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Or they must answer the next three questions honestly and be bound for those three questions. So that means you could literally bind a wraith up, they fail their saving throw, and then you never ask them a question ever.
Yeah.
And they're just bound. Now, after the three questions are asked, that chain becomes useless against that entity. So,
and I'm sure they're none too pleased.
No. And there's not really any negative effects with this, because it's a powerful item, but it's not incredibly powerful. It still can be broken out of, the chain. It still acts as a chain. So if an ally of the ethereal beings decides to break the chain, it will break it. It has an AC just like a normal chain, HP, yep, like a normal chain. It can be broken. It's an ethereal chain. That's just it. Think of it almost like a blessed chain. It just gets that added bonus and it has the magical powers. There's also a mirror called the Mirror of Forget-Me-Not.
Okay.
So this mirror can be used against an ethereal being, and the ethereal being must make a DC 13 wisdom saving throw.
Okay, not bad.
Or be forced to relive its memories of its previous life. As you watch, you can watch through the mirror. So this would be good for your mystery campaign. You can figure out what happened by forcing the spirit to, it's a catch-22. However, The catch to this item is once you use it on an entity, the mirror breaks and can be never used again.
Better be careful about which one you choose.
Yes. You can have another mirror created.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's a one-time use item.
It's a one-time use item, yep. It's because it is very powerful. If you use it in specific manners, it can be very powerful.
Yeah.
Interesting. But yes, there are your ghost capture kits for today.
We're going to have to get all these magic items and codify them and get them put out, like, you know, put them on the Discord or do something mm-hmm. to where we can people can have them, be able to see them.
And when I get some time, I'm going to start making a book with all the magic items both Tom and I have created, and I'm going to see if we can't get it attached to our Discord, and I want to see if we can't get some artwork and stuff done, like Stuart was talking. I want to get this thing looking nice.
Yeah. Maybe put it on the DMG.
Yeah.
Or the DMs Guild.
Yeah. But yes, those are our two magical items for the day.
Very cool. I like them. I like them both.
Oh, woo. Well, Sergio, before we bid everyone adieu, do you have anything you want to tell our listeners?
I like you. I love you. Thank you for listening. I also have another podcast called Phantom University. It's a bi-weekly podcast with my best friend, Sean Hamill. We take a look at nerdy things like sci-fi and horror and comic books and the like. We give it the elevated discourse we feel it deserves. I've got a master's degree in humanities. He's got one in creative writing. And so we think that that people look down on these things as childish or as low class. But I think that they have a lot. Well, we both do think that they have a lot to say, and the way they say them are very unique. Also, like I said, like during the mid show break, I'm participating in a charity Dead by Daylight tournament this weekend. You can look up Lydia or not. She's one of the co-sponsors of it on Twitch or on Twitter. And all the proceeds go to Make-A-Wish, which is a great foundation, a great organization that helps kids out. And yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
That's a lot of going on this month.
I'm a busy dude. I'm a very busy guy.
Huh, right. Well,
nothing compared to you, though.
Oh, come on. So I have the D&D, obviously, live play podcast, 5e. Fumbling Four and the Almighty Crit.
Yep, yep.
We have the Cyberpunk Red podcast, Cyberpunked. That's Cyberpunk with apostrophe D. We have our Call of Cthulhu live play, which is Call of Cthulhu Mythos Mysteries. Oh, what else we have? We also have the Resident Evil Lorecast.
Yep.
Yes. Let's see. We also have coming out a very special preview at the end of this month of another show that we will be coming out with soon. And I will be hinting at the final show. Well, I take that back. We have another show coming out on the 25th of this month. We have the Avatar Legends TTRPG live play that we're going to start doing.
Nice,
it's coming out on the 25th of October. And then we have another show that I will hint at. It has a lot to do with the spookies. Yes, it does. A lot of the scaries. If you like creepypastas, you'll love the show. And if you love your SCPs, you'll love it as well.
Interesting.
And it's not too different than the other shows we do. I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. Well, as the month goes on, we'll get closer to the reveal of what it is.
Yeah, it's a breadcrumb trail.
Yes, yes. But other than that, that's all I got going on.
That's just like half a dozen shows.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. The list is getting so long that I can't remember half the things we do half the time.
For sure. But yeah, we'll be back next week with some more spooky stuff. Actually, we'll be back next week with some spooky stuff. It'll actually be our patron chat.
Yeah.
We'll be talking to our scholar and up patrons. Is that right?
Yep. Wizard and Up.
Wizard and Up. Yep. Our wizard patron, wizards and deity, wizards and fighter and deity patrons are all eligible for the patron chat. And we're going to just keep up a theme of spookiness. Like, we'll be talking about their favorite spooky characters that they've played, or creatures that they've fought, or campaigns or adventures that they've played in. We'll talk about all sorts of stuff. And the patron chats are a lot of fun because you get a lot of different perspectives too.
Yeah.
So you get stuff that Lupus will bring up that he's done in a game. I'll think to myself like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Like
I want to do this now.
That. Yeah, I'm going to do that next time.
Yeah. As I have always said, it's always best to learn your DM and player styles from other DMs and players. You cannot learn enough from other good players and good DMs.
Oh, no, absolutely. You're true. That's for true.
But on that note, I think it is time for us to bid everyone adieu.
Thank you so much. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.